We are activating your unique self-discovery one show at a time. The Orchard of Wisdom Self-Discovery Podcast are at your fingertips, just waiting to inspire and invite you in discovering just how awesome you really are and how to navigate through life in joy, enrichment, personal abundance, in mind, body, spirit, heart, and soul. All the people we bring you are here to serve you on your journey of life. Do enjoy our next show. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of our Global Veterans right here at selfdiscoverymedia.com. I'm your host, Sarah Troy, and what we have here today is Navy Rear Admiral Kyle Cozad. He's written a wonderful book, and it's called Relentless Positivity, A Common Veteran Battling Uncommon Odds. And I can imagine that there must be a lot of uncommon odds there. He's the unparalleled courage in service and life. Throughout his storied military career as a naval rear admiral, he showed grace, courage, resilience in his service to the American people. Not only did he lead at various levels within Navy aviation, joint multiple service during his career and five critical assignments, he's also served in a variety of diverse leadership positions within the Navy and Department of Defense, including the 22nd Senior Director in the White House Situation Room, Commander Joint Task Force at Guatemala Bay, and Commander of the Naval Educational Training. To say that he's qualified would be an understatement. But in his upcoming book, Relentless Positivity, A Common Veteran Battling Uncommon Odds, it allows the readers into the life of this remarkable human, despite living with the challenges of being a paraplegic, the result of a tragic accident, and later continues to live a life, as he always has, facing all the potential roadblocks head on and blowing past them with sheer abandonment. And through faith and determination, he has embedded in his life challenges with the relentless positivity that is highlighted in his little new book, The Relentless Positivity. Positivity is something that if we don't have in our life, we can't navigate forward. We have to look at life no matter what it deals to us, because very often it deals a rough hand and we think it's happening to us. But when we pause long enough, we realize it's happening for us. Where's our strength? Where's our courage? Where's our abilities? Because we're never given anything that we can't truly cope with. So how did Kyle cope with all of this? Welcome to the show, love.
Sarah, thanks so much. You know, it's a great question. And number one, that was the kindest introduction I've ever received. So I'm definitely going to download this podcast. But you've heard people say this before, where, you know, a single moment in your life can change your life forever. And that's exactly what happened to me on March 16th of 2018. Up to that point, as you said, I'd have a successful Navy career. I had served for almost 32 years. I had risen to the ranks of two-star Navy admiral in charge of a large organization of 50,000 people. And, you know, I was, you know, literally on top of my game, but suffered a freak accident shortly after coming to Pensacola and the Naval Education and Training Command. I wish I had something, you know, sexier falling down some stairs, which would have, you know, been climbing Mount Everest or skydiving or paratrooping or, you know, doing something a little more dramatic. But it literally was a freak accident in our historic home. And, you know, that one night, I don't have a tremendous amount of recollection other than a feeling of helplessness where, you know, I couldn't move my legs. I couldn't feel from my waist below.
You know, we all get these redirects in life. And, you know, I slid off a rock and broke three bones in my ankle, you know, and it's always the stupid things that kind of do the most damage. And you know, everybody thinks that, especially in your line of business, that it must have been in the line of duty, etc. But, you know, it's life happens again to us for particular reasons. And I can imagine at the time you wouldn't have been able to make sense of why. But then when we can get out of the why and go, okay, what am I meant to do with this? Boy, where am I meant to go?
You know, and that's a great setup because, you know, I remember, you know, several things about, and again, for your listeners,
yes,
the sound of Blue Angels in the background. So I can't apologize for them because that's the sound of freedom here in Pensacola, Florida. But I can remember distinctly waking up in the ICU and during those first couple days, you know, as I came off pain medication, you know, my neurosurgeon coming in with my wife to deliver the news and his prognosis that, you know, because of the significant trauma to my spinal cord, I would not only never walk again, but I'd never be able to get up out of a wheelchair. And, you know, it was a decision time for me. And, you know, I'm a very faithful guy, and I kind of walked through the things that motivated me to, you know, do what I've been able to do up to this point following the injury. But, you know, I knew that I had a decision to make, and I could either lay in bed and feel sorry for myself and ask the why question. But, you know, I refused to do that. Instead, I looked to see, hey, what can come out of this? Because, you know, I think you've probably, if you go Google four truths or five truths, you know, you'll see a myriad of different discussions. But, you know, one of the things that I latched onto very early in the process was that, number one, God has a plan for each one of us. Mm-hmm. Number two, we're all here for a reason. And despite your circumstance, you know, we can always make a difference in the lives of others. And so that's what I latched onto is to not so much why, but what's next.
Yeah. I interview a great deal of many veterans. So, you know, I'm not a pro-war person at all. And people say, why do you interview so many veterans? And I said, because I have such admiration for the adversity that they have to face in life. And that, you know, how many of them, because of that adversity, because of those challenges from their service, where it's led them to where they are today, it's what they do with it. It's like how they were on the battlefield. You're facing a situation. You don't have time to kind of moan or whine about it. You've got to deal with it right there and then. And how many of them come back and realize, this is missing. This is not serving me. I'm not getting what I need. And so they created a platform to serve people who are missing that particular need. And I always feel that the mindset, you know, of a warrior is to look at, okay, how can this serve? How can this benefit others? And I think when you can change from the victimization to the, okay, this is a new platform. What am I meant to do with this platform? Where am I meant to go with it? How can I still inspire people to move forward? Because everybody goes through something in life, the cosmic 2x4 that stops us dead in our tracks. Mm-hmm. But what we do with it is really the test of who we are.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And so, you know, I never really set out to inspire people. I never really set out to write a book, to tell you the truth. But I will tell you that, you know, I fell back. So, you know, I was a career Navy pilot for, you know, the first 32 of 35 years. And one thing that, you know, I learned among many things during those 32 years is, you know, your flight plan always changes. And I consider this a change in my flight plan. But, you know, I also learned in those 32 years, you know, how to be resilient, how to be tough, how to be adaptive, how to change and, you know, explore and make the best out of whatever your circumstance. And so, you know, I had several things as I went from the ICU on into inpatient physical therapy that really led as my inspiration and the kind of my North Star. You know, obviously the first one was my faith. And I couldn't have done anything, you know, without, you know, my faith in God. But I had an incredibly strong family to include a young son who is also a Navy pilot. And when I moved from the ICU into my inpatient physical therapy, my son was getting ready to go on his first deployment. So he was going to fly his helicopter on board a ship, and he was going to be gone with limited communications with the family for the next 7 months. And, you know, I can remember my wife telling me that, you know, he said, hey, Mom, you know, I'm going to ask to stay behind for a little while and help out here. And my wife, Amy, who is probably stronger than I am, I told him a few simple things, you know, gave him great advice. She said, number one, you go do the job that you had trained to do. You go do it safely. And I'll worry about your dad. I'll take care of your dad. And she told him, mind you, you know, 36 hours prior to this, the doctor had told us, you're never going to get out of a wheelchair. Well, she promised my son that I would walk across the ramp, walk across the flight line when he got home and give him a hug. And, you know, as soon as I heard that, I cringed inside.
Yes.
But there is no stronger motivation than, you know, having something like that to look forward to work for.
You know, you mentioned a few times inpatient therapy, but what people have got to be careful of is the inpatient therapy. You know, you can't rush things. The things are going to happen as your determination, your tenacity, your resilience, all of that counts, but your body will heal as it needs to heal. And how it heals is a great deal to do with your mind and heart connection.
Couldn't agree more. And I can remember, you know, specifically, and this may strike you as a weird motivation, but the very first day that I started my physical therapy sessions, went in and, you know, number one, I'd been in a hospital gown for the past 8 or 9 days. And my occupational therapist came in my room in the morning. He had a gym bag that my wife had packed, and in it were a pair of athletic shorts, you know, an athletic t-shirt, tennis shoes, and he threw them on the bed. He said, "Get dressed. We got some work to do." And so that was the very first feeling of normalcy, if you will, that I was really, really reaching for. And I was excited to embrace. And so, you know, within those first couple of days, they hooked me up, and I was in a wheelchair. They hooked me up to this very clunky machine, and it was able to pull me from my wheelchair up into a standing position. And the very first time that happened, it was euphoric because, you know, literally I couldn't roll over in bed by myself. I needed assistance to do that. Yeah. And so to be standing once again, and I'm 6'5". So, you know, to be 6'5" again, all of a sudden I had this flash go off in my mind that I can do this. I can do more than the doctor said. And I can vividly remember telling my wife that night, "I want to go back. I want to put my uniform back on, and I want to continue to serve in the Navy." Mm-hmm. And she looked at me like, "You're crazy, or you're still on pain meds. Why don't you go back to sleep?" But that was a motivation of mine because, you know, you mentioned the military, and, you know, for me, it wasn't about the battlefield. It was about making a difference in other people's lives, whether that was the folks who I served with, or it was the folks, you know, who live in the same great country as I did. And it was an extremely strong motivator for me to get back and demonstrate to people what I could do, and how much I love the service.
You know, and we, every single one of us on this planet, are here to contribute. We're here to serve one another. And the thing is to find, in what way are you meant to serve? Whether it's the janitor, whether it's the kitchen chef, the dishwasher, or the admiral, you know, whatever our service is meant to be, is always do it with pride, do it with honor, and do it with conviction. And when you do find that service and it's been interruptus, all it's saying to you is, okay, you can't do it the same way anymore. But that doesn't mean you can't adapt and adopt a new way of doing it.
You're right. You know, I quickly realized, and so, you know, I spent about 6 weeks or 6 months in the hospital. I'm sorry, 6 weeks in the hospital, and I went through my physical therapy to the point where I was strong enough, and they deemed me independent enough to be able to come home and, you know, live with the assistance of my wife, who had now kind of unassumedly, you know, begotten the role of a caregiver slash nurse slash coach slash everything.
Yes.
And so, you know, as I made that transition, you know, I continued to work hard on, you know, my physical abilities and, you know, relearning how to do these things. Mind you, when I was in the hospital, you know, it started with, okay, getting up from a wheelchair to a walker, which the doc had said was impossible. But then, you know, trying to learn how to take a step again and think back, you know, it's something we take for granted, but just the motion and, you know, you got to swing your hip this way, you got to do this. And that's complicated by the fact that you have absolutely no feeling below your waist. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one step turned into 10 steps, turned into 100 steps. And, you know, as I am a self-admitted type A personality, all naval aviators are. If they tell you they aren't, they're probably telling you a fib. But, you know, we continue to count steps, and I continue to, you know, move the threshold for what's my next goal? What can I do next? And, you know, part of those things were, you know, just physically getting back into our home. The first, you know, probably 2 months that we were at home, I couldn't get into our house. I stayed in a small office area that we have on the main floor because we had 10 steps, you know, that were required just to get into the house, and another 24 steps that were required to get up to our main living and bedroom area. And so, you know, incrementally setting those goals. And when I found out that, you know, senior Navy leaders had agreed to allow me to continue to serve, you know, which in and of itself is significant. Mm-hmm. You know, I realized then and there, really something that you just mentioned is they didn't need me or want me for my mobility. Yes. It was all about what I had up here in my brain,
yeah,
what I had in here in my heart, and what I can continue to tribute.
Right, exactly. It's just a readaptation into, you know, focusing on what you can do and not putting the focus on what you can no longer do. You know, I know it may sound weird here, but, you know, I had epidurals when I was giving birth. And there's one time where they actually dropped my legs after I gave birth. And you kind of think that when people are, you know, numb from the waist down, that they're weightless, they don't feel anything. And when they dropped my legs, which, because I couldn't feel anything from the waist down, all I felt was just heavy weight. I didn't feel any pain. I couldn't feel the touch, but it just felt heavy weight that I had no control over. And it made me look at people who have, you know, got this diagnosis, and we think, well, they can't feel anything, so, you know, no big deal. But you've got this heavy weight that you're carrying around, that you have, you know, no maneuverability with it. You're carting this heavy weight around with you. And that really changes everything completely, doesn't it?
It is. And, you know, you just relearn how to live life at that point. And, you know, from my physical therapy, where it was one step at a time, to, you know, 10 steps to 50 steps, you know, I kind of made the transition where, you know, I got stronger and stronger. Eventually I, you know, was strong enough where I could pull myself out of the wheelchair, hang onto a handrail, and get myself up the 10 steps into the house. And so, you know, I always used to joke that, you know, for me, that was like climbing Mount Everest.
Yes. Yes. No joke.
Going to be completely honest with you and your viewers, I got downright tired of sleeping in an office outside when my wife started talking about her master bedroom and her
house. The drive was there.
And so I remember one day in physical therapy, my therapist said, what are we going to work on next? I said, I've got to figure out how to get up steps. And so, you know, for the next week, we worked on that. And you know, I would scoot up the steps on my bottom and you know, work, because, you know, those were the same steps that I fell off of,
right,
to cause the injury. And so this was, it was 4th of July weekend. My wife's birthday is the 24th of July. And I promised her, you know, I'd figure this out before her birthday. And so I'd been practicing this in physical therapy, and, you know, I wheeled myself around to the steps, you know, one early evening, and she said, what are you doing? I said, I just want to, you know, transfer myself from the chair onto the steps, make sure I can do that safely. You know, there was never a doubt in my mind, I'm going all the way to the top. I just didn't want to tell her that.
Right.
I got there. Next thing you know, it was one step, it was 10 steps. And, you know, she came running up the stairs, you know, with a tear in her eye, because, you know, for us now, life is all about problem solving and taking that next step, regardless of what that step happens to be.
People don't actually understand how resilient the body is if the mind is working with the body. When you're in the mindset of, oh, woe is me, why did this happen? I'm now a paraplegic, or I can't do this and I can't do that. The mind is telling the body that it can't do it. But when the mind works with the body has incredible healing abilities. But it does require the heart, mind, and the belief. You know, when you visualize yourself, I'm going to walk again. I may not be able to run or stride or this or that, but I'm going to walk again. This is what I'm telling my body. The body and the cellular structure and the sheer frequency of the body, the vibration in the body, that it starts to work with you and believe what you are saying to it. And this is why we always say to people, please be careful what you say about yourself, because that's A, what the universe is reflecting back. It's also what your body is hearing. So if you're saying to your body, we're going to walk again, we're going to do this, this is our challenge, this is our goal, your body actually is listening to you on that cellular level and is going to work with you. Whether, you know, to what extent, that is still to be decided, but the fact that it's actually working with you is already showing the mind, heart, body, and soul connection, and that we're not separated from our body, from our mind, heart, and spirit.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, you know, I'm a testament to what you just described, because Very early in my recovery, somebody, you know, coined the term, you just have this relentless positivity about you. And, mm-hmm. Again, from my second or third day in the ICU, I was convinced, I was optimistic. I said, I'm going to figure this out. I'm not going to let my circumstances dictate the rest of my life. I want to be in control. And again, you know, that's in your mind and that's in your heart.
Yes.
And, you know, we've been able to do that. It's, I set out really writing this book as more of a journal for my children, mm-hmm. just to explain to them, you know what, well, this is what I went through. And, this is, you know, what I was thinking about. This is what I was observing, you know, the whole time, just because they weren't there, like my wife, Amy, was every day of physical therapy. That turned into probably a 50 page, little self-published pamphlet that I gave each one of them for Christmas. And that made it out its way from the family. And somebody on the outside saw this and said, you've got to expand on this. You've got to write a book. And it's always humbling to say, well, I haven't done anything that anyone else wouldn't have been able or willing to do. But I went ahead and, started to, write a chapter here and there. And next thing, we have a book out. And so, we're excited. And, like your mission, as we talked about, I just want to share that story that, may make a sliver of a difference in somebody's life, somebody who's dealing with a circumstance. And, I consider circumstances anything from a significant injury that, leaves you paralyzed for the rest of your life to something like a cancer diagnosis, or maybe it was a bad report card or a bad day in school, a fight with a loved one. Those circumstances all require us to be relentlessly positive to be able to take that forward and make a difference in our lives.
I'm going to correct you in something. You said not every, like everybody would do. No, not everybody does do. So many people do give in. I've literally known people who've died from the diagnosis and not the disease. And the people that get handed this, and it's why me, and become, so embraced in the victimization of it, they're unable. It does take a certain mindset. It does take a certain resilience, a certain tenacity to say, I'm not going to give in. Now, there's the initial grief, the initial transition, the initial, my God, what has happened? And then the, okay, now what do I do with it? Not everybody gets there. And I think, A, your faith, B, your training, and C, your heart. We're very much in, no, we're not going to give up or give in here. We're going to try our damned best. But not everybody has that ability. They have the choice, but not everybody makes that choice.
No. And, I saw that, I'm a people watcher by nature. And, I would show up for my physical therapy sessions 15 minutes prior. And I would just always watch other people. And I was fortunate because, my wife, Amy, would go home and feed the dogs, clean the house. She'd come back for a session, then she'd go back home. And so she was with me every single time I, had a physical therapy session. And I watched people who didn't have that same support.
Yeah.
And so She was an inspiration. She was a motivation to be able to push me. I just really felt like I was fortunate, to have that support structure there. And, again, to do things. And I am not, this is, again, the type A personality. I don't prescribe to the word cannot, can't. And when anybody tells me I can't do something,
I'm on.
Turn around, the gloves are on, and, it's time, to face the fight of your life.
Yeah.
I've learned that through naval aviation, and I didn't have a storied career. I had to work hard. I worked through some setbacks. I worked through some failures. But I put those things behind me, and I was able to, again, nobody's going to tell me I can't without hard work, without passion, without motivation and toughness.
My father was a squadron leader in the war, the Spitfires. Before he became a pilot, because they were selective back then, he was in the Navy and sank three times. And then they needed Air Force, and he actually trained in Florida. And he trained on all of the planes and then became the squadron leader and, stealth at night in Italy. And I still don't know the whole thing. I want to know, but one day I hope that it will be revealed. He's long gone. Unfortunately, he died very early at 45 from heart disease, because back then you couldn't talk about it, stiff upper lip. You couldn't speak to the things that you were going in there. There was no such thing. And so it was kept in, and that kept in, and then just, you know, volcanically erupted, and his heart gave out. And you know, and I feel that sharing a story of, you know, adversity, of redirects, of challenges in life, it gives permission for people who are going through challenges to speak about theirs. You know, yours, yes, you know, you could have been a paraplegic for the rest of your life and you decided you were going to walk. Not everybody has that strength. But the inspiration of that strength gives them enough strength to say to other people, I'm struggling. I'm struggling. I need someone to talk to. I need somebody that can help navigate me through this, because I want to get to that space.
Right, right. It, you know, by human nature, I have never been a person who would ask for help or accept help. I always wanted to do things on my own, but mm-hmm. you know, this injury really pushed me out of my comfort zone. And, you know, I had to rely on my nurses. I had to rely on my wife. I had to
humbled
ask.
You.
It absolutely did. But you know, one of the things, we had a president named Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was a polio victim, and he spent mm-hmm. a majority of his adult life in a wheelchair. But if you ever notice, there are very few pictures of FDR where he's sitting in his wheelchair. Most yeah. of the time, you know, he's staged in another chair. He's behind his desk in the Oval Office. Yeah. And that struck me again as another motivation, you know, to say, number one, I might need help. So I'm not afraid to ask for help. But, you know, if he can run a country,
yeah.
you know, I can work my way back to be a contributing, successful member. And I was able to do that. I served my last 2.5 years on active duty. I was able to return to full duty. Couldn't pass my fitness test because I'm not as fast as I used to be.
Right.
But I was able to return to duty. I traveled around the country. You know, I learned how to, you know, navigate unknowns of commercial airplanes and how to get myself on and off, work our way through airports. And it's now just, you know, second nature. Following my, I love the story about your father, because following my retirement from the Navy, I was fortunate enough to, you know, accept the job as president and CEO of the National Naval Aviation Museum Foundation here in Pensacola. And, you know, our mission is to tell stories about heroes like your father and what they did in our United States Navy. And so I feel very fortunate that not only was my doctor wrong, I use a walker a majority of the time in the
right.
house, use a wheelchair. I can drive myself with hand controls.
Right.
And I'm, you know, fully employed, and I feel like I'm making a difference today.
And that's the choice that we have to make. You know, again, we don't get through life without, you know, obstacles. We don't get through life without closed doors. We don't get through life without tripping up. You know, that is, as I said, we're never given more than what we're supposed to be able to cope with, but it is the choice. You know, I know many obstacles that I've been an asthmatic all my life. So we put a lot of stop to things, and I have fibromyalgia now. And I know many people give into it, and I just decided to partner with it. We're in a partnership. Right. And sometimes it says, hey, my voice is louder today and you better pay attention. OK, I respect that. I've got to pay attention because it's supporting me to do what I want to do. And if I don't pay attention to it, it will flatten me. So, you know, whenever you have a physical obstacle, you learn the boundaries of what you can and cannot do. You don't fight it. What's the point? Push to the limit that you can, but not to the point of breaking. But you learn to partner with something and go, OK, we're in this together. We're in this together. Let's support each other.
Yeah. And I would take that even to another level where, you know, a circumstance like that, at least for me, you know, really encouraged me to try other things.
Yeah.
If I couldn't do something like I could when I was able-bodied. And I'll be honest with you, I'm probably more aggressive in the things I'll try, the things I'll do now than before I got hurt. I probably 7 months after my accident, I attended as part of the Navy Wounded Warrior Program, an adaptive sports camp. And I, you know, went there and had no idea what to expect because, well, I haven't done that before. I haven't done this before. But I was able to do things and, you know, prove to myself, hey, I can do this.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, you know, I ended up being selected one of 40 team members that represented the United States Navy. We went to Tampa, Florida in the DoD Warrior Games. And without a doubt, I was the most senior officer there and I was the oldest. And so they called me the silverback.
You're not even silver.
Not at all. Well, it's just the light. But you know, the experience of being able to do things and, you know, probably my fondest memory from that experience, two fond memories. I had never played tennis in my life, but went out and watched the wheelchair tennis competition. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, that looks like fun. Maybe someday I can try that. And went out a second day after they had already selected the team. And, you know, the coach said, hey, we need one more to round out our doubles teams. And so I went out there and I, you know, swung the racket and hit some balls. And at the end, he came over and said, why didn't you try out for the team? And I said, well, you know, coach, I've never played tennis before. And he said, well, you do now.
Yes.
And immediately I was on the tennis team and you just had a great time. But it proved to me that, you know, don't let anybody tell you what mm-hmm. you can't do. You know, show them what you can do. Get out there and try different things.
Yeah. And you know what you can or can't, or you know that you have to adapt on how you do it. Right. You learn to listen to your own body and you know when to push and when to pull back. But how do you know what you're capable of doing unless you try?
You're exactly right. One of the things. So this summer we always take vacations into the Rockies. So we go in the summertime, escape the heat of Pensacola, Florida. And this summertime we rode bikes. We went out and we horseback rode. We rode a train. I had a special wheelchair that I could actually hike around some of the Rocky Mountain National Park lakes. And, you know, people, when they heard about this, you know, well, why did you try that? Weren't you scared? Weren't you, you know, concerned? And I said, you can't be concerned in life. You just have to, you know, go forward, you know, do things that you want to try, do things that you want to do. And again, show others that, you know, there's nothing that's outside the art of the possible.
Then you push your own limits and you push through the fear. Your own common sense steps in. And that gauge of, no, that is too dangerous. Don't do that. Right? That common sense comes up. That's foolish. Right? It knows how much you can push and how much you can't because you've learned to find that balance and listen to the common sense. This isn't fear talking. This is common sense talking. Right? And you learn that. And that allows you to push or redirect or go into different directions because your common sense is the driving force and not the fear.
Yeah. So my common sense is probably better known as Amy Kozad, my wife.
I had somebody
reach out to me several months ago through kind of the Wounded Warrior program. And he gave me an invitation to go out to Central Virginia and do a tandem jump. So skydiving. And I was like, man, I'm in, you know, tell me when I need to be there. And as soon as I told my wife about this, she said, no, that's where we draw the line. So I guess she's my common sense.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, like, in a lot of ways, you've become the daredevil, and you probably always were. Again, you're driven by that consciousness of, no, pay attention to this. No. Yes, you can do that. But being a daredevil, you always want to push the limits. And then having that compass of a common sense to say, hey, mate, you can pull back and go, yeah, maybe you're right.
You're right. That's, you know, the common sense is important, but I still, you know, have adopted that personal motto that, you know, I hate that word can't. And I think that should apply to all of us. Don't let anybody tell you what you can't do. Go ahead and demonstrate what you can do. And that's really driven me to the success that I've, you know, seen in the past 4 years of my recovery.
Then maybe she should say, you shouldn't do that rather than you can't do that.
Oh, when she says can't, I say, yes, ma'am.
Exactly. And, you know, this is actually something, as you pointed out before, the support going through therapy. You know, my son at 13 fell off a hook above a ravine and went down, you know, bum overhead and landed in the stream below with his leg behind him. He'd snapped his femur in half. Now, normally at that age and growing, the femur will splinter. But I had him on some really good nutritionals that were helping his bone growth. And he just clearly snapped in half. So much so that when they put the drill bit in to put the screws in, the drill bit came off in the bone.
gosh.
Right. So, you know, like that's, and then I had him on those nutritionals afterwards and his bone healed extremely fast. They were really, really surprised. And it was his own common sense that said, don't do this, you feel insecure. And then, you know, the peer saying, well, if my girlfriend can do it, why can't you? All right. And then boom, I get this phone call. Your son's in hospital. And this is 2 weeks before we're meant to actually go to Florida on holiday. So, but it's, he recovered very quickly because he had the resilience and the tenacity. He was never why me or anything else. It's like, I'm going to play soccer again. I'm going to do this. Bone healed marvelously. And what he actually did end up with was the ligament was the issue in the healing. And 3 days before the COVID lockdown, he had snapped his Achilles heel and just had an operation. I'd gone over to look after him and he owns a restaurant. And then it was, okay, you know, we're locked down. Well, nobody could go into the restaurant. He said, well, how do I keep people employed? So it was purely takeout. So there he is at the cashier taking phone calls with his leg in a cast up on a chair, you know, just carrying on doing what we can do. And that, you know, it's, if we don't have resilience in life, if we're not willing to adapt or adopt a new way of doing something, it doesn't matter who you are or what the obstacle is, we're going to get stuck or we're going to get paralyzed in a different way.
Yeah. You know, I will go back to the can't word. And when I retired in 2020 from the Navy, had a very small ceremony here in our museum, you know, because of COVID and the restrictions.
Yes.
In that speech, I said, my doctor told me that there are three things I can't do. I can't do laundry. I can't do the dishes. And I can't make the bed. And to this day, the biggest eye roll I have ever received from my lovely spouse had been to those three things. But I did another podcast recently with another group, and you know, they posted that on their social media. There are three things Kyle Kozad can't do, but he can.
But you can always learn.
I can learn.
And I'm sure she'd appreciate it.
I'm a slow learner. You know, this summer I was given the opportunity, and this is, you know, part of the magic of working for, you know, a national museum, aviation museum here in Pensacola. And I was given the opportunity to go flying in the front seat of a Stearman aircraft. So Stearman are World War II era trainers, biplanes, open cockpit. You know, I said, my gosh, you know, what an honor to go up with three World War II veterans to be able to do something like that. And so, you know, I immediately agreed. And then, you know, I had that shadow of doubt. How am I going to physically get in the cockpit? How am I going to do these things? But, you know, I was able to do it, you know, able to problem solve and figure it out. And there was no more liberating feeling than being back in the cockpit of an airplane flying with three World War II veterans, you know, than I had that day, you know, earlier this summer at the Pensacola Air Show.
I always wish I'd learned to fly, because I think I got that same buzz from my dad. And I remember being out with a friend flying. He said, take the controls. And I did a 200-foot nosedive over the water and then came back up. I can't do the upside down. I have an equilibrium problem. But the exhilaration. And then when I lived in South Africa for 11 years. And when I was leaving there and going to New York on my way here to Canada, I sat in the captain's seat for six hours while he slept, talking to the co-pilot. And just the absolute wonders of just the world and the universe open to you, the silence, the beauty, the plane that's 200 miles away that you could see over there, you know, just, I could see the joy. I could see the joy of the flying. And I always wish that I, you know, but it was just not meant to be, but I wish that there had been an opportunity to pursue that, because, and of course, no, it's never too late, but you know, circumstances can get in the way. I think if you've had an experience, and it may be only a once, what do you take from that experience into your own life? That exhilaration, that moment of connection, because it is a connection. It most certainly is a divine connection. And take that in and make sure you bank it. And anytime that things get tough, go and revisit it, because that sheer exaltation of that moment will help rejuvenate you.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, for me, you know, I use the word intoxication. Mm-hmm. You know, there was something intoxicating about not in the figurative sense. being able to be, I mean, that was my office for 32 years, being able to be airborne. I love to teach other people how to fly. Was able to fly around the world in a couple of weeks. I mean, you know, there was nothing that I loved doing more. And so, you know, that same feeling of accomplishment, satisfaction, you know, intoxication, you know, I apply that to any obstacle I run into today. You know, you can still get that sense of self-satisfaction, you know, with any circumstance in your life, whether it's, you know, getting beyond an argument with a loved one and saying, I'm sorry, or I love you, to, you know, overcoming a significant injury like the one I had. There is always something, you know, at least for me, that's been very fulfilling. And then I look for, hey, what can I do next? You know, always continue to set that bar higher and higher.
Here's a question for you. How exhilarating was the new Top Gun movie for you?
It was great. We actually got to show an advanced version of the movie last May here in our museum foundation. It was, you know, it's always a great recruitment tool for the Navy. Mm-hmm. It's fun to watch. And, you know, whether you're young, and I watched it with a bunch of, you know, very senior naval aviators. And when they can walk out of a movie like that and not say, well, this was messed up or that wasn't accurate, it's got